The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everybody has the potential for greatness inside of them. It might be a new career you seek, a better relationship and home life, or something entirely different. No matter what that goal is, if you set your mind to it, you can make it happen. Welcome to Your Authentic Life with your host, Susan Cranston. In today's show, you'll take away some great tips, resources, and stories designed to spark the idea to achieve your dreams. Now, here is Susan Cranston.
Hi, it's Susan Cranston here, and thank you for creating space and tuning in to Your Authentic Life. Today, on this Christmas Eve episode of our show, we're going to be talking about how to address the holiday blues. Feeling sad, depressed, or anxious at any time of year is no barrel of monkeys, but every emotion seems more heightened during December's holiday season. Not everybody feels jolly old St. Nick's exuberance for gift-giving and all of the seasonal trappings. In fact, according to a survey by the American Psychological Association, more women than men feel stressed at this time of year. There's another study that reported that women spend on average 11 full days preparing for the holiday. So, ladies, if you're listening to this and you're feeling a little bit exhausted right now as you're sitting there after stuffing the turkey and getting everything ready for Christmas dinner, you may understand why, given how much time you probably have spent preparing for the holidays. And according to another survey by WebMD, the average American spends 42 hours per year on holiday activities. And going back to this concept of feelings and how folks are addressing this in the holidays, women indicated in this recent survey that they believe themselves to be responsible as traditions keepers based out of a need for family making. So you can imagine all that busyness. There's emotion that happens around this too. The traditions that have been passed down, whether it's cookies that need to be baked, presents purchased, wrapped, and elaborate dinners prepared along with writing cards, attending holiday parties. I'm getting exhausted just thinking about all the things that have to happen. Well, I think you get the general idea. So whether it's based on real or imagined expectations, women have a tendency to create stress in order to honor these rituals and traditions. And as a result, they can build up some feelings of resentment toward their spouse or other family members who don't see the same sense of obligation, or perhaps even maybe a little bit oblivious to all of the work involved in making the holidays sparkle with that wonderful Christmas magic. All of the stress builds up, and bam, it isn't unusual to see glum faces, a sense of extreme frustration, or pent-up anger in many North American households. And I don't think it helps that magazines, commercials, and TV shows project picture-perfect holiday scenarios. Even when there is conflict in a storyline, it seems to get resolved within, you know, that 28 minutes or so, allowing for a few commercial breaks, promoting different must-have gift ideas for that special someone on your list. So I think this is pretty woefully unrealistic that these manufactured made-for-TV scenarios simply add to the unnecessary element of stress and the emotions that go along with it. Holiday stress shows up in many different ways, and worries about money, whether it's overspending on gifts and parties, along with cramming more into an already packed schedule, creates ideal contributors. So this is a good time. I mean, addressing feelings at any point and talking about emotion and having brave, conscious communications is always important, but it seems even more appropriate and timely at this specific time of year. And so I'm really thrilled to spend time with you here on Christmas Eve with my very special guest, Trista Thorpe. And Trista is someone who I have had the absolute pleasure of getting to know. Trista, I met her through the Chopra Center University. And when I was becoming a perfect health teacher in Ayurveda, and also when I became a meditation teacher. And so Trista was actually one of my teachers. And Trista has an incredible background. She's a Vedic master. She is someone who's been trained through Deepak Chopra and Dr. David Simon. She has an incredible story, and I can't wait for you to hear it. All of the information about her bio and the specifics of it are on the Your Authentic Life page on the Voice America website. I encourage you to go there. Trista's also going to share information about how you can reach out with her directly. And without me going into details about sharing her story, Trista does an incredible job of it. Trista, I am so thrilled that you're here on Your Authentic Life. And I'd love for you, if you can take a moment, to talk a little bit about your journey and your journey to date and sort of what led you to the path that you're on right now.
Well, hello, Susan, and thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. It's an honor and a privilege for me to join you on this Christmas Eve program. My journey to date and leading up to the Chopra Center was a bit of a wild one. I grew up in Southeast Alaska, and my parents were divorced before I was 2 years old. So I primarily was raised by my father, and I was jostled around quite a bit as a young child. I lived with various different caretakers for the first maybe 7 to 8 years of my life, and that in and of itself really created a lot of turbulence in my childhood because I couldn't understand where my parents were and why I wasn't with my family, and I had to adjust to new living environments, new pseudo-siblings, new schools, new friends, and trying to figure out where I was going to fit in to my new home. As a result of this, I really grew up with kind of a sense that I didn't belong anywhere. I didn't really fit in with any of the groups at school. I didn't have any real grounded family life or upbringing. And I experienced various levels of, let's just say without going into details, various levels of abuse throughout my earlier formative years. And so, you know, I think that part of my journey was a sad one. It was a really difficult one in that I was really left to figure out how to take care of myself at a very young age. I became independent and basically an adult by the time I was 5 or 6 years old. My defense mechanism, you know, our survival instinct of fight or flight kicked in, and I learned at a very young age that if anyone was going to take care of me, it was going to have to be me. So I became very strong, very independent, very much a doer of getting things handled on my own. This actually protected me for a long time. This was kind of my survival mechanism, if you will. And it served me for a period of time. And then as I started to get older, junior high school, and became a young adult, what I found was that I was still experiencing a lot of those emotions of fear and unworthiness and loneliness and feeling invisible or like I didn't matter, that nobody cared about me and that I didn't really have a place in the world. And so I really began to project those emotions outward onto everyone I met and into every life experience that I had. So essentially the gestalt of all of these emotional experiences linked together created a story of who it was that I thought that I was, really. And I noticed that I kept repeating the story every time I'd meet someone or get into a new life experience or set of circumstances. The projection of a lot of those unintegrated emotions started to become real negative qualities of mine, and I began to experience depression and anxiety and a lot of self-loathing and feelings that I would always be alone and a sense of exhaustion from life that I was always having to look out for myself. I ended up working in the music business. So I graduated high school. I moved out when I was 15, lived with family friends, and managed to get myself through graduating high school, and then fell into working in the fast-paced world of concert production, promotion, and touring for about 15 years. This industry actually perpetuated my attitude problem and my kind of my egomaniacal behaviors, really, because in that entertainment industry, it's a pretty high-powered, highly energized, and very driven industry where you've got to be a very strong personality to kind of be there. The relationship that I found myself in was with someone who struggled with hardcore alcohol and addiction issues. This person was also, in the music business, and we worked together. And, you know, after a period of time, I just found myself in this position of really not liking who I had become as an adult. And it was at that point that I knew that I had to leave the relationship and I had to leave the industry that I was working in. And that was scary for me because I hadn't ever done anything else. So really the long and short of it is that I left my relationship 3 weeks before I was to walk down the aisle. I left my dress hanging in the store and I never looked back. And I left my 15-year career in the music business. And for the next 5 years, I just kind of stumbled through life trying to figure out once again where I fit in. All of those childhood emotions came rushing back to the surface. And I began to really experience heavy levels of depression and anxiety and, to the extent that I even considered making an early exit from this life, because I just really felt like I had no value. You know, when I was working in the music business, it appeared to everyone on the outside that I had really created an amazing life for myself. You know, my fiance was a Grammy-winning recording artist, and we were traveling in tour buses and, you know, walking red carpets and really living this amazing lifestyle on the outside. But what was really happening on the inside was that I didn't like who I was. So when I changed that and left it all behind, it was a very scary time for me because I didn't know what was waiting on the other end. And I just knew that I was either going to be eaten alive by my current lifestyle, or I had to take a risk. And I just was teetering on this precipice of, I don't know how to do anything else in terms of a career, and yet I can't stay here. And even though I love this person more than anything else, I cannot save him, and I cannot stay in this place. So, you know, the next 5 years were my rock bottom, as if my whole life hadn't already been a rock bottom. I don't know where the strength came from to just continue on, but there was just kind of an inner drive inside of me that just kept saying, keep going, keep going, keep going. It was 5 years to the day, no coincidence there, that I left the music business and my relationship and walked into the doors of the Chopra Center. And that was about 7.5 years ago. I immediately began doing a lot of my own work there, primarily through meditation and emotional healing and integration. And really just through diving deep into unconcealing, you know, where all of this emotional imprinting originally occurred, how it was that it needed to be integrated, going through the motions of actually doing the work, peeling back the layers, showing up every day, being present and working through the steps that I now teach people. You know, it was a gradual unveiling process of who and what I am at the core of my being. I think as a result of everything I've been through, it puts me in a very strong position to be able to guide and help others through their own journey of emotional healing and this level of integration work.
And I'm so thankful that you were able to share your story so authentically with our listeners. I remember the first time I heard you say it when I was, you know, sitting in a group for the teacher training, and you had shared that. And I sat there literally with tears in my eyes, just feeling this sense of wonder and awe and appreciation for what you'd gone through and your willingness to share so deeply with others, and the ability for them to perhaps learn and to know that even if they're not sure of what lies ahead, if they know they're not making nourishing choices for themselves, or there's something inside them that's telling them to step away from what's going on in their life, that there will be a better path. There will be hope. There will be a better day ahead for them. And I think you're just absolute living proof of that, Trista. Even, you know, this uncertainty of what your future would be, you just knew you had to make a change.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to do, to arrive at a place in your life where you know that the way you've been living all the way up until that point is no longer working, and it's going to really require a pretty dramatic shift in behavior and ways of thinking in order for you to get from where you currently are to where it is that you really want to be. It's scary, and it's, you know, it's the most terrifying work that people can ever embark on, and it's the spiritual journey. You know, I was just on a call a couple of nights ago with some of my coaches, and one of the gals was saying that only 5% of the population will embark on doing emotional healing work because it's so uncomfortable and it's so scary. And yet we can see, just by looking around us, you know, we have so many examples to point to in the world today that are very clear indicators that this is the work that humanity needs to be doing the most right now.
And especially at this time of year, when we're thinking about perhaps situations where we're with people that perhaps there's a lot of emotional baggage, a lot of conditioning, a lot of expectations, whether they're realized, realistic, or just, you know, within our own perspective. And I really want to dive into a number of elements that you speak to so eloquently and that you also teach, because I think that there's so much that you can share with our listeners. We do need to take a very quick commercial break. And when we come back from that break, Trista, I would love for you to talk about the importance of taking time to reflect on the circumstances of your life and how that can help on a path to healing, even though it's a very, very scary thing to do. So thank you so much for sharing what you told us about your life story. And listeners, stay tuned. This is going to be a fabulous continued interview with Trista Thorpe. And we'll be right back in a minute.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Work with Susan Cranston as your personal coach. Live your purpose and breathe life into the dreams you've kept hidden away for too long. Bring deeper fulfillment and contentment to each day. Learn ways to nourish your mind, body, and spirit connection. It's time to begin your journey today. Reach out to Susan today at 226-989-7533. Or visit SusanCranston.com. Susan is a master life coach and an Ayurvedic lifestyle practitioner and meditation teacher who is certified with the Chopra Center University in California. Visit SusanCranston.com or call Susan at 226-989-7533.
When you think of inspiring women, who comes to mind? Is it a visionary like Oprah Winfrey? Political or legal figures like Hillary Clinton or Sonia Sotomayor? Or how about entrepreneurial business leaders like Meg Whitman? No matter whom you might be thinking of, make sure to add one more to that list. Deanne DeMarco. She's the host of Today's Inspiring Women. Each week, Deanne turns you on to the next rising star in business and leadership and what their successes and challenges have been. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Empowerment.
Susan Cranston is ready to be your communications consultant. Susan is a writer, speaker, and former marketing executive with over two decades of experience. Susan also teaches various workshops, including Perfect Health and Meditation, which helps to manage stress, reduce anxiety, release emotional toxicity, increase strength, and nourish the mind, body, and spirit. If you have a writing or social media plan or need a motivational speaker for your upcoming event, visit SusanCranston.com or call Susan at 226-989-7533.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are tuned into Your Authentic Life with Susan Cranston. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to AuthenticaConsulting@gmail.com. That's AuthenticaConsulting@gmail.com. Now, back to this week's edition of Your Authentic Life.
Welcome back to Your Authentic Life. I'm your host, Susan Cranston, and I'm so thrilled to have Trista Thorpe here with me as my special guest on this Christmas Eve episode. We're talking about how to address the holiday blues and all of the emotions and feelings that people have, whether or not they choose to deal with them or decide to face them. This is a time when emotions tend to be heightened, amplified, when many stressors are at play, from family gatherings, from time together or time apart, missing someone or being with them or wishing you were somewhere else. All of these things tend to jumble up at this time of year. Trista and I were talking about her journey to date, what her experiences have been like. And Trista, just before the break, I had asked you about what's so important about taking time to reflect on the circumstances of your life. And you shared about your life story. And why is that so important to help you on a path to healing?
Thank you, Susan. Well, I really believe it's important to take time to reflect on a daily basis. Taking time to reflect on a daily basis is actually a practice that Deepak Chopra teaches called recapitulation. This practice can be done at the end of your day, just before you go to sleep at night. Essentially, what you'll do is just take 1 to 2 minutes to close your eyes, recall the moment you woke up that morning, and just play out the scenarios of your day in your mind, not reliving each one of them, but just watching them flash across the screen of your awareness, all the way up until the moment you sat in your bed and began the recapitulation process. Again, this should only take 1 to 2 minutes, and the value in doing that, in my opinion, is that you have an opportunity to go back and scan how it was that you showed up in your day. What were the experiences that you had, the conversations that you had? Did you find that you were overly reactive in certain scenarios, or were you able to pause during challenging conversations or situations and really take a couple of moments before you responded to think about how it is that you wanted to respond? It's a great way to just go back and observe how it is that again, that you're showing up on a daily basis. I think also, if you're someone who's new to this process of really acquainting yourself with your emotions and doing some inner work and diving inwardly, is to start just by having a look at your life. Find some quiet time. Have a look at, you know, do like a life review or a life recapitulation. Go back as far as you can remember, and just from the place of an observer, not so much reliving all of the experiences or going into all of the details, but if you can just replay the movie of your life across the screen of your awareness and really notice the highlights. What happened? When did it happen? Who was involved? What emotions were you feeling as a result? What needs did you have that weren't able to be met? What boundaries were violated, or what could you have done differently, or You know, what are some of the things that happened to you? And I think that going in and just spending time reflecting, whether it's over your day or over the span of a lifetime, it helps us to connect with ourselves more deeply. It helps us to connect with that inner aspect of who we truly are. And it helps us to also connect with the emotion, you know, that inner child that's within each and every one of us that had those experiences. Through that process, we can identify kind of the trigger points from life of, you know, when I go back on my own life and the first time that I was dropped off, you know, by my father and he didn't come back for a year, and what that felt like for me, what the environment was like, who it was that I was living with, what were my emotions, how was I feeling, what were the conversations going on in my head or, you know, in the new environment that I had found myself in, helping or going back to look at all of that really allows us to see where the emotions came from and how it is that they became imprinted in us. So briefly, I just want to go back a little bit and kind of reframe this conversation. So emotions, what are emotions? To begin with, I don't know that we ever really educate people unless, of course, we go to school and we're studying psychology. We don't really learn these things. So emotions are essentially energy in motion. And how emotions become imprinted are that we have a thought, and a thought triggers a chemical response. And then that chemical response is felt in our physiology. That feeling is something that we then associate with an emotion. We create a label. And we categorize it as being good or bad or happy or sad. And then we decide whether or not that's an emotion we want to experience again or do our best to never experience again. And so as a result, what we do is we enter into every conversation and every experience in life, either trying to acquire or avoid certain experiences, certain feelings, certain emotions. And so that imprinting process occurs every single time we have an experience. And so what happens is that as we have, you know, a multitude of experiences as we go through life, and earlier I mentioned this gestalt, you know, this sequence or chain of events that are linked together from an emotional perspective, every time we feel that emotion later on in life, it's more compounded, it's more intense. And so this process of recapitulation or, you know, really reflecting enables us to go back and see where it all began, how it all started, how the emotions became imprinted, how it is that we then wove them into a fabric of a story, and then present ourselves to society as this, the storyline of who it is that we think we are. And really, you know, my conversation with people is helping them to get to a place of understanding that they're not their emotions. They're not the things that happen to them. They're not stuck. They don't have to be stuck in that energy of depression or sadness or shame or guilt or grief or fear or anger. You know, you don't have to be stuck there, because emotions are energy in motion. And we know that energy is movable, it's changeable, it's constantly taking on different forms. So through this process of really just kind of recapping our day or our life or spending time in reflection allows us to see where it all began. And then that provides us with an opportunity or a vantage point to then create what's known as a pattern interrupt and change it.
So it's to create a new story.
Exactly.
For yourself. Because as you said, you know, you are not your thoughts. You are the thinker of your thoughts. And the whole concept that this is changeable, that you can create more nourishing choices and create a new karmic cycle for yourself, or the software of the soul, which is in essence what we're describing in this model that you're sharing right now, and the importance of recapitulation, doing that in the evening without judgment. It's just the observation process, right?
Yeah.
It's the observation of your day.
And thank you for bringing up that point, because it's the without judgment piece is the most important piece, because oftentimes people will go back and do a life review or a day review, and what will stand out for them, and I think this is true for probably all of us, I know it's true for myself, is that what stands out the most are the negative things that we've done or said, our negative actions. For whatever reason, we don't hang out and spend too much time looking at all of the amazing things that have happened, but rather we look straight to our shortcomings, our inadequacies, our qualities that we think are negative. And so to do this process without judgment, it's not about going back and judging yourself. It's about saying, oh, okay, well, I can see here where I could have done things a little bit differently, and maybe it would have unfolded some potential rather than perpetuated the melodrama. So the next day or the next time that a person finds themselves in that type of conversation or experience, they can very clearly recollect this recapitulation process and be reminded that they can consciously choose to show up in a different way next time. It's about self-improvement. It's just about making better choices the next time around.
It's being more, present, being more mindful of it. And it, you know, in a very simplistic term, and this is just an example that popped into my head, is if you were videotaping yourself through your day and then you watched it in freeze frame, and you could see the patterns that might be showing up and think, oh, wow, I didn't realize that I, you know, jingled the change in my pocket 17 times in a day. Or, you know, that I brushed my hands through my hair that often. Or, you know, those are, you know, very physical reminders. But what we're talking about is more the choices that we're making. But to be able to, often, if you're able to see that and do this exercise, this mindful exercise, this recapitulation, it can really help to point things out in a way that is non-threatening if you're doing it yourself.
Yeah, I think there's such tremendous value to having a look at the way that we're showing up and living our lives, because if we want to change things, then we have to change the story, and the story requires editing and rewriting, and we can't do that if we're not willing to look at the story that we're currently living.
We can't change the past. That's behind us, but we certainly can take the present moment, do this recapitulation, and consider what choices we want to make going forward, and to write a new story. Because after all, we are the producer, right? We're the director, the producer,
the author, the actor.
We're all of those things, the musician,
and we're
whatever.
All of the characters in it as well, because what we, you know, another thing we can really look to is that we play all of those different roles that we experience in life. At some point, we play all of those roles that are showing up through other people in our own lives in some way, on some level.
So on that note, just in terms of people that show up, there has been someone, and I know this from conversations that you and I have had and things that you've mentioned, has been really important to you in terms of healing your emotions and healing your heart. And when you came to the Chopra Center, you began working with Dr. David Simon. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what's been so helpful for you in terms of that connection?
Oh my gosh. So David, what a gem. David Simon was a prolific author and a profound healer. He was the co-founder of the Chopra Center and our medical director. He was Deepak's best friend and business partner and confidant. And his work, you know, David was a neurologist. And his greatest work, however, was, well, his greatest work, his greatest passion was helping people to find ways to heal themselves. He often said that the best use of a physician's time is to teach people how to heal themselves. And something that was very near and dear to David's heart was this conversation of emotional healing work. When I began working with the Chopra Center, I was hosting our events, and David identified that I seemed to be very comfortable in the conversation of emotional healing when we would run those programs. I was very excited to be in that room and help people on that journey. So David actually approached me, and we had such a great relationship, and just a deep friendship, and he was also a mentor and a teacher. And he just said, "Tris, this is your life's work. You may not see that yet. I see it, and the people who come to the center and experience you see it and feel it, and I want you to start co-facilitating this work with me." And I said, "Wonderful. I am honored." And yes, and I was very excited. So before I actually began co-facilitating with David, he said, "You know, you need to go do your work." And I said, "Well, I can't do it here because I'm too close to this process." So he sent me off to work with his best friend, a woman named Debbie Ford. I spent time going through the shadow process and meeting with Debbie and talking with her about her journey and her experiences in doing this work and working with her own shadow and really, you know, moving through that process. So then I went back and began co-facilitating this work with David. What I've found to be really powerful about all of this is probably the unveiling of who I really am. I always thought I was this broken, ugly, unlovable, invisible, unwanted little girl who, you know, throughout the course of life became a very edgy, hard, distant, cold woman because I was so fearful of being hurt or being rejected that I kept everyone at an arm's distance. I wouldn't let anybody in. And so through my own digging into working with Debbie and David, being mentored and trained by the two of them, really uncovering this conversation of emotions and doing the work and integrating the components that needed to be integrated and understanding what the gifts were from all of those experiences that I had has brought me to a place where I'm really able to now help others move through their own process while I continue to do my own work simultaneously.
So you've really been able to take the learning from and been really open to that, which is fabulous. We're going to take another break in a moment. And when we come back, Tris, I want to ask you more about why people emotionally sabotage themselves. And often, you know, perhaps they're doing it subconsciously, but it might even be worse at this time of year, perhaps if they're not looking at the patterns that are happening, but it's playing itself out in these non-nurturing ways. So when we come back, I want to explore that in a bit more detail and then talk about conscious communication and how that can be such a helpful experience to deal with emotions. So Tris, thank you so much for sharing what you've done so far. Listeners, please stay tuned. We have more to go on Your Authentic Life. We'll be back in a minute.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Susan Cranston is ready to be your communications consultant. Susan is a writer, speaker, and former marketing executive with over 2 decades of experience. Susan also teaches various workshops, including Perfect Health and Meditation, which helps to manage stress, reduce anxiety, release emotional toxicity, increase strength, and nourish the mind, body, and spirit. If you have a writing or social media plan or need a motivational speaker for your upcoming event, visit SusanCranston.com or call Susan at 226-989-7533.
Mothers and daughters have a unique relationship. There are trying times and loving times. There is joy and there can be heartache. Listen for Communicating from the Heart, the Empowered Mother-Daughter Relationship. Your hosts are Elizabeth Lutz along with her daughters Danielle and Melissa Schoniker. Come with them as they share an open and honest discussion to help mothers and daughters everywhere strengthen and support their own relationships. Listen Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
Work with Susan Cranston as your personal coach. Live your purpose and breathe life into the dreams you've kept hidden away for too long. Bring deeper fulfillment and contentment to each day. Learn ways to nourish your mind, body, and spirit connection. It's time to begin your journey today. Reach out to Susan today at 226-989-7533 or visit SusanCranston.com. Susan is a master life coach and an Ayurvedic lifestyle practitioner and meditation teacher who is certified with the Chopra Center University in California. Visit SusanCranston.com or call Susan at 226-989-7533.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
You are tuned into Your Authentic Life with Susan Cranston. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to authenticaconsulting@gmail.com. That's authenticaconsulting@gmail.com. Now, back to this week's edition of Your Authentic Life.
Hi, you're listening to Your Authentic Life. I'm your host, Susan Cranston, and I'm here with Chopra Center's Vedic Master, Trista Thorpe. Trista's been sharing her story about the work that she's gone through with the Chopra Center and with Dr. David Simon, who has been her mentor and has helped her take the realm or the helm of many of the programs that she has facilitated over the last few years. And we were just talking before the break around how people, and a question I was wanting to ask Trista, and I'll do that now, is why do you think people emotionally sabotage themselves, whether they do it knowingly or in many cases do it subconsciously? And why is that perhaps even more relevant or happen with greater frequency at this time of year?
That's a really great question, Susan. Self-sabotage is tricky, and self-sabotage really is being driven more so by the unconscious mind, and it goes all the way back to where these emotional patterns were initially imprinted within us. So whatever beliefs we took on as a result of our life experiences going all the way back to early childhood, we took on belief systems based on what was happening around us and what our experiences were. From those belief systems, we created what I refer to as underlying commitments, which are, you know, unconscious commitments that we made to ourselves as a result of past experiences. So people will oftentimes self-sabotage themselves unknowingly, and maybe there's some level of awareness around it at the time that it's happening. They might be thinking to themselves, wow, what am I doing? This is the last thing that I want to be doing, but I'm pushing this person away and I'm saying things that are hurtful to them and hurtful to me. And I want to stop because I don't want to do this, and I can feel that I'm pushing this person away, but I can't help myself. I can't stop myself. And sometimes we're conscious of that and sometimes we're not. The bottom line is that the unconscious mind drives about 95 to 98% of everything we think, say, and do. So that imprinting that occurred when we were children, and even, you know, things that occurred yesterday or earlier today or last week or last year, that's all being stored in the unconscious mind. And the way the unconscious mind works is it operates from this place of about a 5 or 6 year old child. The unconscious mind doesn't process negative. So what happens is that something occurs, we develop a belief around it, and as a result of that, the unconscious mind does everything in its power to uphold that belief that we have taken on to be true. So if the belief, for instance, I'll use my own example. If my belief, as a result of early childhood, you know, kind of being given away or raised by different people, if my belief system became that I'm unwanted, I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable, Those are my belief systems. So that's what my unconscious mind has programmed in. So then throughout my entire life, what I've done is attracted experiences that reflect back to me ways in which I'm unwanted, I'm unworthy, and I'm unlovable. So it's not a conscious decision that I'm saying, oh, yes, I want to be treated poorly, and please show me how much you don't want me or that I'm not worthy. It's that's what's programmed into the unconscious mind. And because the unconscious mind doesn't process negative, that's the belief system that it's firing on. So it's working overtime to continuously achieve that, what it thinks is a goal.
And so that's
this is how we get into this repetitive behavior patterns, and we start self-sabotaging because we're scared. We're afraid. Whatever we're sabotaging, there's some fear-based component to that, because whatever it is that we're pushing away, if it gets too close and it's actually real and true and amazing and everything that we ever hoped, then we know for certain that it's going to be taken away from us. So we'd rather push it away in advance and self-sabotage it than to step into it and embrace it.
To have some level of control over creating that scenario that's happening with the unconscious mind, saying, there, okay, I've got that done. Check that one off my list. I've made that happen. And that reminds me, you said that so beautifully, and it reminds me of something that was put up on the board in one of the teachings at the Chopra Center that said, worrying is like praying for whatever it is that you're worrying about to actually happen.
Yeah.
And
because that's what you're setting your attention on.
It's what you're setting your intention on. And so you're creating that. Just like you said, your unconscious mind is trying to create that based on the conditioning that you've had as a child. And that also reminds me of an example that, you know, if I were to say to you, Trista, don't touch that button. Don't touch that button. What are you actually thinking to yourself?
Unconscious mind hears is touch that button.
Touch that button. It's because we think in the positive. We try to create those positive situations. So even if you're dealing with, you know, a child, let's say for parents, and this might just be a quick tip for someone, instead of telling them not to put their hands to their mouth or to not play with something, give them something positive to do instead. So changing the language that you're using around a situation to say, hey, instead of, you know, don't put your hands in your mouth, why don't you put your hands in your pocket? Or here, pick up this ball or whatever it might be, which helps sort of reprogram the thinking to create that positive experience.
That's exactly right. Language patterns are so important. And when we can start to really identify why it is we're saying the things that we say and what the real intention is behind it, we can reframe what it is we're trying to convey in a way that allows us to use more positive motivators. I love that you brought that up.
So how does that play out then? And this is a topic that I know is near and dear to your heart, and it certainly is for me too. And I'd be really honored if you could talk a little bit, because time's going so fast here, about conscious communication and what that means when we try to actually change the scenario in terms of avoiding this pattern of self-sabotage. How can we show up differently using conscious communication? What does that mean?
Conscious communication is really a model for learning how to effectively communicate with other people in our lives. I think it's important to understand that the people and situations that show up in our lives to trigger us are actually our greatest messengers and our greatest life lessons. So understanding that, then looking at ways in which we can understand the conscious communication model, you know, all we're trying to do is find ways to increase the likelihood of having our needs met in life on a daily basis. Because when our needs are met, we feel happy and content and excited and fulfilled and joyful and connected. When our needs are not met, we feel the opposite. So in terms of conscious communication, there's a pretty high likelihood that we're all interacting with and engaging with others, yet I don't know any school system or educational system that teaches people how to effectively communicate with one another. And so I think the biggest challenge And the biggest, you know, obstacle really for humanity in general is the fact that we don't know how to communicate with one another. So when we can identify very simplistic approaches to how it is that we express ourselves and how it is that we hold the space for other people to express themselves without judging them, right, or judging ourselves, but just allowing each party to communicate their needs openly and honestly and authentically, making requests versus demands and really getting clear on what we're asking for, it really allows us to step into a place of understanding one another and deepening our connection to one another.
And deepening our connection because we're keeping the walls down. We're not using words that can create this a sense of defensiveness or playing into perhaps some patterning where it triggers people's thoughts about their own unconscious mind, or saying, yeah, you're right, I am this way. And then that creates a whole cycle of non-nourishing experiences.
So true. So true.
So what does this mean? What are the steps when it comes to conscious communication? Let's say, you know, we're Christmas Eve here. We're heading into Christmas dinner tomorrow. We've got the extended family all around us. And you and I know that we've got some, perhaps there's a situation where there's some uncles that may say inappropriate things, or maybe there's a cousin who there's a lot of drama with. And this might be a great opportunity for listeners to potentially practice some conscious communication skills. What are the four steps that are involved in this?
Okay, well, the four steps that are involved are, there's four questions. So anytime you are feeling triggered by something or someone, the four questions that you want to be able to stop and ask yourself are, what happened? What feelings are arising within me? What is it that I need that I'm not receiving? And what is the specific behavior that I'm asking for? So to kind of broaden the conversation just a little bit, the first question we really want to ask ourselves, so what just happened? We want to come from a place of observation versus evaluation. When we say, you know, so-and-so showed up late, and we start creating a story around, you know, how that person is so disrespectful, or, you know, whatever the story might be, we start to perpetuate the psychological equivalent of fight or flight, and we start to really get wound up. So if we can just ask ourselves, what just happened, and just identify so-and-so arrived 10 minutes late. So just identify what happened. So that's the first question, is what happened? You know, Cousin Joe said something that offended me. That's even going into the story. Cousin Joe said, when are you going to get a life? At the dinner table, at Christmas. And so the answer is, Joe asked this question. We'll use that example going all the way through because that can be family conversation. I've had that one before. I don't have a Cousin Joe, but anyway. The second question is, what emotions are arising in me? So at the dinner table, the holiday dinner table, Joe says, oh, when are you going to get a life? That's what he said. Now, what emotions are arising in me? Probably anger. Anger, frustration, resentment, a little bit of hostility. What I want to point out here is that you want to identify the emotion as opposed to words that keep us in a place of being a victim. So, for instance, if what Joe says makes me feel rejected because he's in some way implying that I haven't figured my life out yet, so I'm not good enough, I haven't quite met the expectation, the emotion is not rejected. I would then ask myself, when I'm feeling rejected, what's the emotion? How do I feel when someone rejects me? I might feel sad. Okay. So you want to drill down until you actually get the emotion. So the first question is, what happened? The second question is, what feelings or emotions are arising in me? The third question is, what needs do I have that are not being met? What I need from Cousin Joe is simply to accept me as I am, where I am in this place in my life, without judgment. So that's the need that I have that's not being met. then my request or my behavior is to ask Cousin Joe to, you know, refrain. You would just ask yourself, like, what is the end result that I want to get here? So I would say to Cousin Joe, my request is that you not direct demeaning questions at me in front of the family.
And he can
now,
either say
behavior that
yes
I'm
or no, right?
For.
It's always going to be that choice between either yes or no. So those are the four points that we've got there. And Trista, I wish we had more time that we could dive into this, because I think this is just, these are really important kernels that people can take into the dinner time conversation or any conversation at any time of year. But it's probably even more important when we're facing the holidays here and dealing with some of these heightened emotions. And so coming back to it, recognizing the emotions was one. Two was, making the observation was one. The second one was, what are the feelings that arise in me? The third is taking accountability for those feelings and what needs, well, your top four emotional needs weren't being met. And then the fourth is making the ask. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I think the most important piece of number four is make sure that you're asking for this behavior in the form of a request versus a demand.
Right.
Because no
right.
one responds well to demand. So just come at it from a place of allowing yourself to be vulnerable and just ask in a nice way.
Exactly. And I want to thank you so much, Trista, for being here with us. I'm so deeply honored that you could spend this time here on this Christmas Eve episode of Your Authentic Life. How can listeners connect with you if they want to work with you or have more information about what you do?
I am reachable. My website is TristaThorpe.com. So www.TristaThorpe.com. TristaThorpe.com is my website. I'm on Facebook. You can find me facebook.com/TristaThorpe. I'm on Instagram, TristaThorpe on Instagram. I'm pretty easy to find out there.
You are, and you're wonderful to find. Thank you so much. I love the light and the energy that shines from you, and I'm so grateful to have you in my life, and thank you for sharing with our listeners. And listeners, thank you for creating space and staying open to our conversation on Christmas Eve. And until next time, remember to breathe and think kind thoughts about yourself, because no other person is like you. Inside you is the exact combination of talent, strength, and desire necessary to breathe life into your best dreams. I wish you the happiest of Christmases. I look forward to connecting with you for my New Year's Eve episode. Trista, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I look forward to connecting with all of the listeners soon. Take care, and we'll connect soon on Your Authentic Life.
Thank you for enjoying this week's edition of Your Authentic Life. Please tune into the show again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Please join Susan Cranston for another peek at Your Authentic Life.